You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
We absolutely support Israel's right to defend itself in line with international law.
We need to safeguard financial stability.
2024 is not going to be an easy year.
We used to call it the dream of home ownership, but look at Britain now.
We've got to hang on to optimism and hope because it is the biggest driver of change.
Let's stop thinking of life in terms of Brexit. Let's move on and look to the future.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. It's Wednesday, so it's Prime Minister's Questions, and we're having our usual game of trying to decide what it is the two leaders might be talking about.
Well, it feels a little bit like the economy is one of the plants in my greenhouse. You're desperately trying to sort of keep it alive, keep it going, keep it growing. Figures out this morning, a little bit more hopeful. GDP rose 0.2% in January. Yes, it's only month on month, but it's the sort of thing that the Prime Minister is going to grab onto as much as he can. He wants this election to be fought on the economy. Growth was one of his five key pledges. At least that monthly figure shows that perhaps we might escape from the technical recession last year. But like so often...
So you started with the good news.
Yes, I can go to the bad news quite swiftly. So often in the Prime Minister premiership, it's party political controversy that really threatens to overshadow the little bit of progress.
Yeah, this week it's the ongoing fallout of comments made by the top Tory donor Frank Hester about the Labour MP Diane Abbott. They're reported by the Guardian newspaper. He's apologised to her for the hurt caused, admitting he had been, quote, rude about the meeting they had, that he spoke about her in 2019. This, of course, coming after the former Tory party deputy chairman Lee Anderson's comments about London's Mayor Sadiq Khan, which got him suspended from the party. We told you, as we reported, that he later joined Reform UK. That saw Tory ministers tied up in knots in interviews trying to avoid saying that what he said was Islamophobic. This time around, we're having the same thing happen with ministers trying to say, first of all, that Hester's words weren't racist, weren't race-based, but they were inappropriate. We had ministers out saying that in interviews yesterday. Number 10 said in a statement the comments were clearly unacceptable. It didn't go as far as using the word racist. Mm. It was Kemi Badenoch, who was the first member of the government, to come out and say that. And it was after that that a spokesperson came out and said the comments allegedly made by Frank Hester were racist and wrong.
Yeah, so that was Rishi Sunak's spokesperson who said that. Look, for the Prime Minister, these are deep problems, objectionable comments by politicians or prominent supporters. They are enormously problematic. How do you then respond is also deeply problematic too. The Prime Minister is trying to defend multicultural Britain. And then ministers who seem to be happy to undermine his strategy publicly. I mean, of course, Kemi Badenoch, significant given that she's widely seen as a potential candidate post-election for the Tory leadership race. And can the Prime Minister drag the attention back to the economy, to tax cuts, to economic growth?
These are some of the points that we can be sure that Keir Starmer will be trying to push, the buttons he'll be trying to push with the Prime Minister in these questions as well. Diane Abbott is in the chamber for Prime Minister's questions as well too, so we can be quite sure that this matter will come up as well. It's a question, again, of you know, problems within the Tory party derailing the agenda and distracting the attention from the things that the government would like to be talking about, because it is some good news on the economy. It is something that you would want, if you were Prime Minister, to be focusing on and to be drawing attention to. But these issues within the Tory party seem to be dominating.
Yes, and you can imagine that Keir Starmer would go, you know, front and centre for some attack lines on this against the government and try to understand, you know, the shifting positions also and the shift in reaction from government, I think will be something that the opposition leader will want to understand.
A little bit later on as well, we're going to be digging into the latest trade agreement that the UK has signed with the state of Texas. Now, it's not a trade deal. It's not a full trade agreement with the United States that had been promised and hoped for post-Brexit, but it is something that we'll be getting more details on a little bit later. Let's listen into Prime Minister's questions. Here's Keir Starmer.
Scandal. Mr. Speaker, this week we lost the formidable Tommy McAvoy. He served his hometown of Rutherglen and the Labour government with loyalty and good humour, and we send our deepest sympathies to his wife, Eleanor, and their family. We also learned that the Right Honourable Member for Maidenhead will be taking her well-deserved retirement. She has served this House and her constituents with a real sense of duty, and her unwavering commitment to ending modern slavery is commended by all of us. We thank her for her service. Is the Prime Minister proud to be bankrolled by someone using racist and misogynist language when he says the member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington makes you want to hate all black women?
Minister. Mr. Speaker, the alleged comments were wrong, they were racist, and he has now, as I said, the comments were wrong, they were racist, he has rightly apologised for them, and that remorse should be accepted, Mr. Speaker. There is no place for racism in Britain, and the government that I lead is living proof of that.
Mr. Speaker, the man bankrolling the Prime Minister also said that the member for Hackney North should be shot. How low would he have to sink? What racist, woman-hating threat of violence would he have to make before the Prime Minister plucked up the courage to hand back the £10 million that he's taken from him?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, as I said, the gentleman apologised genuinely for his comments, and that remorse should be accepted. But he talks about language. He might want to reflect on the double standards of his deputy leader, calling her opponent scum, Mr. Speaker. His shadow foreign secretary comparing Conservatives to Nazis, Mr. Speaker. And the man that he wanted to make Chancellor talking about lynching a female minister. His silence on that speaks volumes.
Mr. Speaker, the difference is he's scared of his party. I've changed my party. And Mr. Speaker.
I want to hear both the Prime Minister and lead the opposition. Keir Starmer.
2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister invited himself into everyone's living room at 6 o'clock on a Friday evening. No one asked him to give that speech. He chose to do it. He chose to anoint himself as the great healer and pose as some kind of unifier. But when the man bankrolling his election says the member for Hackney North should be shot, he suddenly finds himself tongue-tied, shrinking in sophistry, hoping he can deflect for long enough that we'll all go away. What does the Prime Minister think it was about the hundreds of millions of pounds of NHS contracts given to Frank Hester by his government that first attracted him to giving £10 million to the Tory party in the first place?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm absolutely not going to take any lectures from somebody. I'm somebody who chose to represent an anti-Semitic terrorist group, Hizbut Tahrir, who chose to serve a leader who let anti-Semitism run rife in this Labour Party. Those are his actions, those are his values, and that's how he should be judged.
Mr. Speaker, the problem is he's describing a Labour Party that no longer exists. I'm describing a man who is bankrolling their upcoming general election.
Keir Starmer.
They can shout all they like. 2 weeks ago, he marched them out like fools to defend Islamophobia. And now the member for Ashfield is warming up the opposition benches for them. And yesterday he sent them out to play down racism and misogyny until he was forced to change course. He won't hand the money back. He won't comment on how convenient it is that a man handed huge NHS contracts by his government is now his party's biggest donor. You have to wonder what the point is of a Prime Minister who can't lead and a party that can't govern. And Mr. Speaker, national insurance contributions fund state pensions and the NHS. So is the Prime Minister's latest unfunded £46 billion promise to scrap national insurance going to be paid for by cuts to state pensions or cuts to the NHS?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm glad he's brought up the budget. It's about time that he spoke about his plans, because what have we heard, Mr. Speaker, from the Shadow Chief Secretary, the Shadow Chief Secretary to the Treasury confirm?
Prime Minister.
The Shadow Chief Secretary to the Treasury has confirmed that the Labour Party will not be sticking to the Conservative government spending plans. So we now have a litany of unfunded promises on the NHS, on mental health, on dentistry, on breakfast clubs, and that doesn't even include the £28 billion 2030 eco pledge that he's still committed to. But what we all know, Mr. Speaker, is that while we're cutting taxes, Labour's unfunded promises mean higher taxes for working Britain.
No, Mr. Speaker, the Labour Party will not be sticking to his completely unfunded £46 billion promise. And he thinks it can trick people into believing that, but simply shaking the Tory magic money tree will bring it into existence. Let's be clear. 80% of national insurance is spent on social security and pensions. 20% is spent on the NHS. So he's either cutting pensions or the NHS, or he will have to raise other taxes or borrowing. Which is it, Prime Minister?
Mr. Speaker, I know it's not his strong point, but if you actually listened to the Chancellor last week, what he would have seen is NHS spending is going up, Mr. Speaker. It's going up. It's a plan that's backed by the NHS CEO, who says that we're giving her what she needs, and at the same time, we are responsibly cutting taxes for millions of people in work. An average worker benefiting from a £900 tax cut, Mr. Speaker. But what I'm hearing from him is he's against our plans to cut national insurance.
The highest tax burden since the Second World War. I did listen to the Chancellor. £46 billion of unfunded commitments. They tried that under the last administration and everybody else is paying the price. But 2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister promised to crack down on those spreading hate. Today he shrunk at the first challenge. Yeah. Last week he promised fantasy tax cuts. Now he's pretending it can all be paid for with no impact on pensions or the NHS. All we need now, Mr. Speaker, is an especially hardy lettuce and it could be 2022 all over again. Is it any wonder that he's too scared to call an election when the public can see that the only way to protect their country, their pension and their NHS from the madness of this Tory party is by voting Labour?
Mr. Speaker, again...
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about pensions. Pensions are going up by around £900 in this year. It's this government that's protected the triple lock for the last 10 years. He talks about supporting working people. It's this government that's cutting taxes for every single person in work, Mr. Speaker. It's this government that's investing in the NHS. But all we have from him is a £28 billion unfunded promise. Mr. Speaker, I had a look at it. It's here. It's all here. Making Britain a clean energy superpower. He's still stuck to it, Mr. Speaker. And if you look through it carefully, there's billions in spending he's already committed to Scotland, billions for Wales. There's actually money for North London too, I notice. But the problem is, none of it is funded. So why doesn't he come clean and tell him under his plans, Britain people's taxes are going up, Mr. Speaker?
So, Prime Minister's questions then, ending there. I thought that was pretty interesting. A step up from the Labour Party in terms of the vote Labour message. That was a strong line, wasn't it, at the end? If people want to protect their country, their pension, their NHS, it is by voting Labour. Distinct difference now, I think, as we get closer to a general election potentially.
Yeah, I mean, just to go through in order of what the leaders discussed, they did tackle that issue that we'd started the programme with, the controversy over those comments by Frank Hester and the Prime Minister calling them, saying that those comments were wrong and that they were racist, but a fairly weak comeback, I think it's fair to say, from Rishi Sunak to Keir Starmer when trying to bring up some of the past controversial comments that some members of the Labour front bench have made about things. Keir Starmer very strongly coming back saying that, you know, Rishi Sunak was scared of his own party, whereas he had changed his own party.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had to dig deep because some of the comments that the Prime Minister mentioned date back to 2016, others from Angela Rayner go back to 2021, and perhaps also in weight they were not as serious, it's got to be said, as what the Tory leader Tory donor is alleged to have said.
Indeed, and then this very determined pivot to talk about the promised phase out of national insurance that was floated in the budget by Jeremy Hunt, and the questions around how will that be paid for, given that it's, you know, being costed by, according to Keir Starmer, by over 40 billion pounds as well. Then there was back and forth over the litany of unfunded promises. But as you say, moving into this idea of what a Labour government would offer.
Yeah, and the Labour opposition leader for the first time started saying, you know, why is the Prime Minister? He's too scared to call a general election. So it does feel like the temperature's being ratcheted up bit by bit.
Yeah, it does feel like we've been in a very long game here of moving into this general election as well. I was happy to see the lettuce getting a mention again to say that if Keir Starmer joking that if Rishi Sunak had a lettuce, it would be 2022 all over again as they count down to when the election is actually going to happen. But yes, we're moving clearly towards a very carefully and slow-moving strategy, it has to be said. We saw definitely a step up in rhetoric from Labour leader Keir Starmer since the last few months of last year, and now moving into that message away from just criticising the government but also directing them towards what supporters of Labour should expect if they vote for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is Prime Minister's questions then for today. Also, though, there is another little bit of good news, potentially economically, that is that the UK has signed a new trade agreement with the state of Texas. Now, this is the eighth of these sorts of agreements that this government has signed on a state level since the Brexit vote.
Now, none of these agreements add up to full trade deals, and so far, a little of the Brexit promise of forging new agreements has materialised. We've been discussing this latest announcement with our government reporter, Lucy White.
So it's probably worth taking a bit of a step back before we get into the specifics of the Texas deal. So obviously this is in the grand scheme of the UK's trade policy post-Brexit. We had, we were told in the run-up to the Brexit deal that this would mean that we'd be forming loads of trade deals with international countries and, you know, beyond the EU, broadening our borders. And in reality, it's not quite worked out like that. We've had trade deals agreed with Australia and New Zealand so far, but they've been the only real big ones. These memorandums of understanding with US states that we've seen done over the last couple of years are a little piecemeal in comparison. You know, what the great hope of our post-Brexit trade policy was that we'd be able to get a full free trade agreement with the US. And that just hasn't happened. It looked for a while like President Biden might be considering something, you know, the work plan starting to be drawn up. But in the end, that's all off the table now. We're in a slightly different trading environment to what we might have been before the pandemic, in that, you know, there was an era of globalization happening then. And since then, stuff like the COVID pandemic, the war in Ukraine, now we're seeing, you know, the conflict over Israel and Palestine, that is now causing problems. You know, we've seen countries like the US start to retrench, bring business onshore. And these memorandums of understanding are not binding, you know, between US states and the UK. They're essentially kind of agreements to try and work together a bit more, perhaps remove some non-tariff barriers like recognition of professional qualifications. I think that's one of the big hopes that they're thinking might come from the Texas deal, is that Texas will mutually recognize our engineering qualifications and we will recognise theirs. And that might help in certain areas, like, you know, when we're trying to expand green infrastructure, we can, you know, perhaps borrow some expertise from over there, they can borrow some of ours. And it's that kind of like commitment to work together more. But in terms of removing tariffs or actually, you know, kind of making substantive changes to the way that we trade with each other, it doesn't really make much of a difference.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, as you say, you know, that we're living in a different era where, you know, it's much more protectionist or is increasingly protectionist. And I mean, not to dismiss the size of Texas or and individual states in the US, which are often, you know, have enormous economies in and of themselves. But this is the eighth deal between a state and the UK. I mean, it all feels like a really limp alternative, frankly, to a bilateral deal. This and quite kind of a bit dismal that the UK government is in this position. Is there any hope that things might improve, that perhaps under, if, let's say, Donald Trump were elected, is there hope for more?
I think you're right. You know, I mean, as you say, Texas is huge. I think it, the size of its economy is almost the same size as the UK's entire economy. And in these eight deals that we've now signed, or, you know, kind of pact that we've signed with US states, we've now signed with economies worth around a quarter of the US economy, so around $5 trillion. So, you know, the size of them isn't to be sniffed at, really, but it's more how do we use them? You know, it's that they're not worth anything unless businesses in the UK and in the US are actually aware of the fact that we're supposed to be making it easier to cooperate with each other. And like you say, it's nothing like the scale that an entire US FTA would be. You know, Donald Trump might make things easier. We know that he does have a slight affinity for the UK, but on the other hand, he's likely to be more protectionist. So, you know, it's sort of half a dozen of one and six of the other. That's backwards, but yeah. You know what I mean?
Equally as clear when it comes to reading trade deals, I think, as to whether or not those sorts of advantages or disadvantages might play out. What's the strategy here of the government in going in with the individual state level agreements, as you say, non-binding? Is there a hope to build that into something the more states they get on board?
I think that would be an idea. And, you know, there are certain, you know, kind of advantages that can be made by doing it state by state. For example, I was hearing from one person that, you know, driving licenses at the moment, you know, it's difficult to get your US driving license recognized in the UK. And a federal level FTA might not necessarily help with that, because driving licenses are kind of administered all at a state level. So, you know, there could potentially be movement made there. But I think as well, it is kind of like, you know, it will take a lot more. Even if we were to get an agreement with every single state in the US, it will take a lot more effort beyond that to be able to say, you know, to draw that together into a bigger idea.
What do you think are the prospects of something new, fresh coming in the trade sphere from the Labour Party? We were speaking to Adrian Wooldridge, Bloomberg opinion columnist. You know, one of the things that he was saying about the potential of the Labour Party is that they could negotiate better, closer relations maybe with the EU, open up more trade opportunities.
Absolutely. And that's something that the Labour Party have really said that they're committing to. You know, they want to be better friends with the EU effectively. But at the same time, there's only so far that they're going to be able to go. You know, they've ruled out joining the single market again. They've ruled out rejoining the customs union. And there's certain agreements that can be made, for example, on food, food safety regulations, on veterinary medicines, that kind of thing, that will make a difference to individual businesses in the UK. But at the same time, that's going to rule out, you know, us making big leaps and bounds with creating FTAs with other countries. For example, with Canada, our trade talks with Canada were paused recently, and that was all about the food regulations that we have in the UK that are currently very closely aligned to the EU. We don't want to be changing our food safety regulations because that would make it harder for us to trade with the EU. But at the same time, Canada really does want us to change our food safety regulations so that they align more with like the US. You know, this is about like chemical carcass washing, you know, hormone injected beef. Canada does want us to move more towards that so that it can trade with us more easily. And that's one of the things that kind of brought those negotiations to a pause, as the UK termed it. So the UK is in a very difficult position in that if it wants to align with the EU, that will make business with the EU easier, which is obviously our largest trading partner. But at the same time, it's going to make it harder for us to agree FTAs with places like Canada or the US.
Yeah, and of course, the flip side of this as well is that it also requires there to be willingness in the European Union to want to change the trade deal as well. And that's something that the Labour Party is going to have to try and build trust on to be able to do it. What about any other prospects internationally? There's been lots of talk about India, for example. Is that something that we could see progress on?
Yeah, it's interesting, India. We've seen talks going on for about 2 years now, and several successive deadlines have been missed, and we're seeing talks drag on a lot longer than expected. Mm. And, you know, it would be the biggest we would have agreed yet. At the same time, we were told by sources in the UK and India at the end of last week that the latest round of talks look to be coming. This is the 14th round of talks that we're in now, look to be coming to an end with still major outstanding issues on goods, services and investment. So they're the three big areas where there's still no real agreement reached. And we had a call, we know there was a call between Narendra Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, and Rishi Sunak yesterday. And Modi said that, you know, that it was a good conversation. But at the same time, it seems to have reignited a bit of that pressure. I think, you know, we were thinking that talks were trailing off on this 14th round and they would be picked up after an Indian election, which is coming around April. So that's really quite soon. And I think that that kind of feeling that things were trailing off a little bit there has reignited some of the pressure that Rishi Sunak feels, because obviously Rishi Sunak really wants to get a deal with India done before the UK elections towards the end of the year that we're expecting. And, you know, Sunak is desperate to basically have some kind of affirmation of his trade policy, you know, and there's really not much to show for it at the moment. So an India trade deal is really important to him for that reason.
That's our government reporter Lucy White there speaking to us a little bit earlier about that new pact the UK has signed with Texas.
Well, that's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so that other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by Tiwa Adebayo and Mia Dawkins. Our audio engineers are Maroof Al-Hussein and Sean Guastamacchia. I'm Stephen Carroll.
And I'm Caroline Hepke, and we'll be back with more tomorrow.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.